This is CBS, I am the world. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes political economics column. He's based in London. However, he also has a most helpful part in a new documentary that you can find at the Wall Street Journal site right now, just up. The Prime Minister versus the Blob, Liz Truss's 44 Days in Power. Joe, a very good evening to you. Liz Truss, as a prime minister, crashed into an event that had to do with some technical language, but eventually she resigned the premiership because she'd lost the confidence of her own party and saw that, according to her, she could no longer lead because there were so many doubts around her. However, you have been talking about this to me for 2 years, and not until I saw this video, very well done, Michael Pack and his family are to be credited, along with your contribution, Joe. You helped the transition explanation of what was going on, because these are financial matters that also lead into the drama of Parliament, which is always entertaining, yelling and screaming and chanting huzzah. And at one point, there were said to be fights off outside of Parliament in the lobbies. However, it begins with Liz Truss taking control of the premiership by vote of her own party after Boris Johnson had resigned, left the office. She was chosen by the party. They voted for her, not by the people of Britain, but by the vote of the Tories, who were in control of Parliament at the time. This is 2022. And she hired for the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Kwasi Kwarteng, and they presented a mini-budget, and the mini-budget was objected to by the Blob. Please explain, Joe. Good evening to you.
Hey, John. Yeah, so, I mean, we're kind of diving back into recent history that nonetheless feels very far away here to talk about Liz Truss's short tenure as Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. And I think that what most people around the world remember about that episode, first off, is that it was very short. It's overlapped with the period when the late Queen Elizabeth II had died, and there was all of the global attention surrounding the state funeral. And then almost immediately after that, Britain had a financial crisis that was blamed on Liz Truss and her crew within the Conservative Party, and that led to her ouster in really an unprecedentedly short period of time. Depending on how you count, it was 44 or 49 days that she was in office. And, you know, I think that the key point of this is, I mean, yeah, that's all true in a sense, that she was the prime minister for a short time. There was a financial calamity, a panic, I would say, more than a crisis while she was in office. But I think that what is really interesting and why it's worth, you know, why it was worth producing this film and why I would hope people will find it worth watching is that there's a lot more to the story. I think that there are much bigger questions that emerge from this episode than this very simplistic narrative that people have been talking about. And I think that some of those are themes, John, that you and I have been discussing really since this happened. You know, there are political questions about whether a country like the United Kingdom is still capable of pushing forward politically with economic policies that will go for growth instead of sinking into stagnation. I think there are some economic and financial questions about, you know, whether the economy can withstand those policies and what you need to do in order to transition into that growth mindset without upsetting some of the fragilities that have developed in the low growth 15 or 20 years we've just had. And then I think there are a bunch of institutional questions that this episode raised about who is actually in charge and what are the avenues that voters can exercise democratic control over the government. And so I think that, you know, this is still very much a live issue. And these are really questions that are continuing to dog British politics. So, I mean, the Truss era feels like it was very long ago, even though it's only a little more than 2 years ago at this point, but it's still very relevant.
The Blob. My understanding from a column you just posted is that there are three amigos that hold back the whole of the European Union, not just the UK. Taxes, regulation, and ecology. And they're all three in this video. So it's not just about the United Kingdom. It's about the whole of the EU. maybe about the United States of America, Joe. I reflect upon it. That is a burden in the Biden years that has been much talked about. Kwasi Kwarteng introduces a budget that's entirely recognizable. He's cutting taxes that were just raised. He's reducing the corporate income tax marginally, and he's looking for growth. And that begins a lot of huzzas from the Tory side and a lot of hissing from the Labor side. However, then something extraordinary happens that you explained to me again and again, but now I get it. The Bank of England gilts something called LDI and the sudden rise of interest rates because of the spike in inflation worldwide, but especially in the United States, where the Federal Reserve raised rates from very low for years to very high suddenly. How do those things all come together and undo Liz Truss, though she had nothing to do with it?
Well, I think that you have to start with what was in that so-called mini budget itself, because I think that that plan was emblematic of so many of the problems that so many governments have around the world right now. You know, at the time, Britain faced an economic growth crisis, which had been going on for a long time. But then it also faced an energy price crisis, which had become really acute after the Russian invasion of Ukraine in February of 2022, but also had been brewing for a while as a result of this green transition or net zero that successive prime ministers had committed the country to without any idea for how they were going to pay for it. So what Truss's administration did when she came in is they thought, well, okay, we have to do a big bang to try to fix some of these problems as much as possible. So we're going to do big energy subsidies, and that's going to try to solve this problem that if we don't do something, it has gotten so bad that businesses are actually going to go bankrupt and then we won't have an economy. And I mean, you had stories in the newspapers and on TV at the time about businesses who were finding it impossible to pay their energy bills and households that were struggling to keep the heat going that winter. So, you know, that was a big part of it. But then she thought, well, we also have to make a down payment on economic policies that are really going to go for economic growth and that will start unsticking some of these things. And so that was where you got what was really a very traditional supply side economic package of tax reforms, you know, not sort of piddling little credits for this group or that group, but like tax rate cuts, big adjustments to the tax base in an attempt to try to reward investment and work and encourage more productive activity in the economy. And I think that the important point about all of this is that none of it was really a surprise because they had signaled that they were going to do it. The only thing that was in there that they had not signaled ahead of time was a relatively small adjustment to the personal income tax for the very highest income earners. So you then have to ask, how do you get from this budget that isn't really a surprise and also isn't coming intellectually from left field at all? How do you get from that to the kind of market meltdown that they had? And the trick was, no one had understood that during this long period when interest rates were very low and economic growth was very slow, you had all of these financial institutions, especially pension funds, that had piled into a particular kind of investment strategy that would make returns for them when interest rates were very low and would start losing the money when rates started going up quickly. And so you have this environment where you have inflation is already starting to push up interest rates, and then you have a little bit of surprise in the markets over the budget. And that little bit of surprise was enough to set in motion this chain reaction, almost like a nuclear reaction, where it's that first particle that hits the first atom, and that sets in motion the chain reaction. And this revealed that the financial system and the economy had become so fragile during this low growth period that they couldn't even now digest policies that weren't even really a big surprise.
If I understand correctly, Joe, there were men in government called the blob. This is the permanent government, the civil servants. And one special man in the government, Andrew Bailey, the head of the Bank of England, who understood exactly that the crisis in gilts, in pensions, had nothing to do with the budget that Liz Truss was advancing, but with Kwasi Kwarteng's help. and they sat there and watched it happen because it gave them cover. Is that correct, Joe?
Yeah, I think that Liz Truss has come to describe the blob, or sometimes she calls it the anti-growth coalition in British government and politics, that makes it very difficult to do the kind of economic reforms that she wanted to push ahead with. And I think that this blob, the way she would describe it, takes a couple of forms. I mean, one of it is specific bureaucrats like Andrew Bailey at the Bank of England who have political incentives to be obstructive. Because remember, he had been in charge of the financial regulator that oversaw the pension funds when they were rushing in to this hedging strategy that ended up imploding during that episode. So he, you know, you have this very powerful technocratic figure at the central bank who has a personal political interest in trying to shift the blame away from the institutions that he was responsible for and on to someone else. Other instances of the blob, I think that she talks about what over here they would call the Treasury orthodoxy. This is the notion that you have a vast civil service or bureaucracy within the Treasury Department, which is very powerful and also very subject to groupthink. I think that they all tend to go to the same schools. They tend to have the same theoretical approach to the economy, the same ideas about how different economic policies will affect the economy. And so this creates a real bureaucratic obstructionism, which isn't quite, personal in the way that, the Andrew Bailey style is, but it is still very obstructive. And, that would show up in the form of, Treasury bureaucrats and, people at the government budget watchdog, the Office for Budget Responsibility, just kind of leaking to the media estimates, which sometimes didn't even turn out to be the official estimates about the costs of some of these policies and the dire economic consequences that they would have. And, really kind of setting out whether they think of themselves as doing this or not to obstruct what the democratically elected leadership is doing. And I think that this episode revealed that that is actually an institutional problem.
Liz Truss decides that she must sack, that's the English word, Kwasi Kwarteng, her Chancellor of the Exchequer, and hires someone who represents the blob. And when we come back, then fracking. Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.